We're very pleased at this time to continue our study in the book of 1 Samuel. We're in the midst of the 8th chapter, and we're just ready to begin at the 9th verse. The subject of this particular passage is the fact that the people have just now asked Samuel to give them a king to reign over them in the place of a judge. Samuel has been their judge. His sons are also judges, and they're not walking in the ways of Samuel. They're walking wickedly. And so they use this wicked action of Samuel's sons, as well as the fact that Samuel is an old man now, to ask for a king to reign over them, like the other nations, in the place of the judge. And so Samuel is very displeased about this. He goes to God in prayer about it, and God tells him that they're not refusing him, but they're simply refusing God when they ask for the king. And so God says to Samuel that they're just acting like they always have since they came out of Egypt. When they desired other gods and they have forsaken me in the past, that's what they're doing now unto you, Samuel, when they're desiring to have a king in the place of a judge. So he says in verse 9, "Now therefore hearken unto their voice." Now although God was displeased with them having this king, it wasn't according to his original will for them to have it. And although it came out as a result of their showing a departure from the things of God, God is going to allow them to have it. It's going to bring about a lot of grief upon the nation. It's going to cause a lot of problems that they are not even aware of yet. They haven't even thought about yet. But God's going to allow them to have it. And so he tells Samuel, "Now therefore hearken unto their voice." You're going to yield to their desire. You're going to allow them to have this king. Yet he says, "Howbeit yet protest solemnly unto them, and show them the manner of the king that shall reign over them." Although we're going to yield and let them have this, still I want you, Samuel, to tell them what's going to happen as a result of this. Let them know in no uncertain terms what shall be the manner of the king that shall reign over them. I want you to protest solemnly unto them. Maybe they will change once they hear the truth on this matter. Maybe they will relent and decide that they don't have to have the king when they hear what you have to say to them, when they hear what the consequences are going to be. And so he then proceeds to tell Samuel what the nature of the king and the kingdom is going to be under a king. So verse 10 says, "And Samuel told all the words of the Lord unto the people that ask of him a king." So we see here where Samuel was very faithful in relating to the people all that the Lord said to him about the king. We also see that Samuel didn't use his own judgment or his own mind as to how bad this would be or what the consequences of it would be, but he allowed the Lord to tell him. He just simply repeated to the people the things that the Lord told him about this. That was adequate. That was enough information. And as a faithful prophet, he told all the words of the Lord unto the people. Now that, of course, is the mark of a faithful prophet. It's the mark of a good teacher, even today, that one would tell all the words of the Lord unto the people. Not use man's ideas, not use man's neat ways of making a speech, but simply tell the words of the Lord. Our job is to reflect what the Lord has already said, what the Lord has already taught to the church. And if we are adequate in that, then our stress will be upon what God has said, upon what God has given us, rather than what we think are our brilliant ways of presenting things in the form of a speech to simply entertain people. Let's use the words of God. Let's tell all the words of the Lord whenever we're teaching what God's will is. And verse 11 says, "And he said, this will be the manner of the king that shall reign over you." So now Samuel proceeds to tell them in detail what God has wanted them to know about what's going to happen, what the nature of the situation is going to be when they get this king over them. He says, "This will be the manner of the king that shall reign over you." He's going to show them the changes. He's going to show them the other side of the coin, so to speak, when they get the king. Now right now all they're thinking of is the pomp and the ceremony and the glory and the fact that they can mingle with other nations now and refer to a king, a man that's heading their government, And Samuel's going to show them that it's going to be quite a bit different from this, because there's another side to the whole matter. This idea of having a king is going to cause them to undergo some hardships and some changes that they had not anticipated. And Samuel's going to spell these things out specifically for them. You know, sometimes even today, whenever members of the church are talking to other people, and the other people ask them who their head is, who their earthly leader is, what man is heading up their organization. Members of the church have a little tendency to want to have some man they can name and say, well, he's our guide, he's our leader. And really, we should be content with the fact that we have God and we have the Savior Jesus Christ. He is our King. He's the one whom we follow, and His teachings are the teachings that we follow. And so let us not fall into the frame of mind that these Israelites had when they're asking Samuel to give them a king. So now Samuel's going to show them the manner of the king that shall reign over them. He begins by saying in verse 11, "He will take your sons and appoint them for himself, for his chariots, and to be his horsemen, and some shall run before his chariots." They might not have realized that this king was going to have a great number of men, a great number of people to work for him and to serve him. And whereas their sons had been up to this time more or less free men, their only obligation to the Federation of the Tribes was like in a national crisis when there was a war and they needed to muster up an army. Otherwise, they were free men to go about and do their own business and to conduct free enterprise and live at home with their families. Now with the king, their sons would be taken and they'd be appointed for himself, that is, for the king. He'd have to have men to man and to repair and to build his chariots. He'd have to have those to groom and take care of his horses. And they'd have to have some then to run before the chariots, that is, to do other things besides just ride the chariots. So there's going to be a mustering of the sons of these people to carry out the great pomp and machinery that was necessary to be run for the kingship, for the royal family and his great retinue. He further says in verse 12, "And he will appoint him captains over thousands and captains over fifties, so that there's going to be an army. There would have to be a standing army for the king. And so rather than them serving at home in the capacity of judges over their various segments of the families and tribes and as elders over the cities, they now would be captains over thousands and captains over fifties in the king's army. And he further says in verse 12, "And will set them to ear his ground and to reap his harvest and to make his instruments of war and instruments of his chariots." So he would also have to have a large number of workmen to take care of his fields, to ear his ground, to reap his harvest, to take care of the raising of the crops that he's going to have on his fields, and also to make the instruments of war. Whatever this would include, the king would employ people to do this type of work and the instruments of his chariots. So there's another phase of the population that's going to be involved in the public service of the king. Then he further says in verse 13, "And he will take your daughters to be confectionaries and to be cooks and to be bakers." So this king was going to have a great amount of banqueting to do, prepare large meals and various types of food. And so he'd take the daughters for this. They'd be the confectionaries and the cooks and the bakers. They'd be employed in the keeping up of the king's ability to entertain, if not just for the personal enjoyment of the king himself and his immediate family, certainly for those that the king would have to keep up a good appearance to, the foreign dignitaries and the high people of state that would be continually coming and going and needing to be entertained. And so the people would have to provide the cooks and the bakers and the confectionaries for this. They would be the ones that would wait on the tables and attend to all of this type of service, and this would of course come from their daughters. Then verse 14, "And he will take your fields and your vineyards and your olive yards, even the best of them, and give them to his servants." Now up to this time, you've occupied all the land. It's belonged to the tribes and to the families. Now this is going to be changed. The king is going to take a certain portion of this for himself. He's going to take the best of them, your fields, your vineyards, and your olive yards, and he will give them to his servants. That he's going to distribute them to his workers, to his people. They're going to be able to possess them and use them and get the fruit of them, and it's really going to be taken away from you. So we see what's happening here is, by getting a king, they're moving then from a nation that has been governed by tribes and families, a nation that has had the individual person to own and possess and to rule over the land. They're moving from that to a nation that now that has a central type of a government, a federal head, and then this central government is going to take up the possessions of the people. Not all of them, but a significant amount of them, so that the people are going to have to make a sacrifice and give up things that will belong now to the federal government. So he'll take your fields and your vineyards and your olive yards, the best of them, and give them to his servants. That is, he's going to appoint people to rule over these things and to be like the owner of them. Furthermore, and he will take the tenth of your seed and of your vineyard and give to his officers and to his servants. So now then that you've been paying the tithe to God, you're going to have another tithe to give, a tenth part of your seed and your vineyards, and he's going to take these and pay his servants with them, pay his officers and his servants. And we'll see furthermore that he's going to extract another tenth of some other things later. So, in addition to the tithe given to God, and maybe even the second tithe that would be given to God upon occasion, they now are going to have to start giving another tithe to the king. So the king can spend the money the way he wants to and keep things going the way he thinks they need to be going with the money of the people. Verse 16, and he will take your men servants and your maid servants and your goodliest young men and your asses and put them to his work. Whatever his work is. We see he's going to be working the fields. We see he's going to be maintaining an army. We see he's going to be doing a lot of entertaining and requiring cooks and bakers for that. And we also know that he's going to have many rules and regulations are going to have to be enforced, and they'll take people to enforce those things. There are going to be taxes to collect now. There are going to be many types of garments to be made for the army and for the household and retinue of the king. And so the men servants and the maid servants, the goodliest young men and your asses, he will put them to his work. So they're not going to be working for themselves. They're not going to be working for their families. They're not going to be working for their communities. They're going to be working for the king now. Verse 17, and he will take the tenth of your sheep, and ye shall be his servants. So he'll take another tenth of the sheep then. So they're going to lose goods, sheep, seeds, and the vineyards. He's going to take the lands, the possessions that they have. He's going to take their children, their sons and their daughters, the very best of them, and they're going to be things that the king will use. And then, and ye shall be his servants. So you're going to lose a lot of freedom. You will no longer be your own person. You'll no longer be free in the sense of being able to do what you want to do. Now you're going to have to look to the king, and you're going to have to obey whatever his whim, his desire, his wish is. And if he requests that you serve him some way or another, you're going to have to do it. Whether you be a craftsman, whether you be a worker in the field, whether you be a soldier in the army, the king then will possess you. You will be his servants. Verse 18, and you shall cry out in that day because of your king which ye have chosen you, and the Lord will not hear you in that day. So Samuel further tells them the word of the Lord, that here's a prophecy. You're going to cry out. You're going to cry out because of this king that you've chosen, and the Lord will not hear you in that day. That is, this is a sin of your own making. You desire to do this, and so God's going to turn a deaf ear to your cries for help, for your pleas, for mercy that you make in that day because of this king. And of course, this is another one of the great principles of God, and that is when we desire to do something so badly, we just can't stand it till we get to do it, even though it's not the right thing to do, and then God allows us to do it. when we suffer the consequences of it, then God will turn the deaf ear. He's not going to come in and rescue us suddenly because of a sin of our own doing that we're so bound and determined to want to get involved in. And that's the situation here with the king. Now at this point, there's something we'd like to point out that's very interesting. In the book of Deuteronomy, God does definitely teach that Israel would have a king, and he gives some of the details about the kingship. And whether this is God simply anticipating that they would demand a king, and he in his miraculous knowledge knows that it's going to come about, and he's talking about that situation, or whether this means that there would eventually come a time in which God would have provided them with a king, it's hard to say for sure. We do know that at this time, when they're demanding a king of Samuel, it's not God's will for them to have the king. If God did want them to have a king sometime in the future, they're premature in their desire at this time, and so they're really going against the will of God. But let's turn back to Deuteronomy, the 17th chapter, and begin there with the 14th verse, and read what God says there several hundred years before now about Israel having a king. Deuteronomy 17, beginning with the 14th verse, "When thou art come unto the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee, and shall possess it, and shall dwell therein, and shall say, I will set a king over me, like as all the nations that are about me, thou shalt in any wise set him king over thee, whom the Lord thy God shall choose. One from among thy brethren thou shalt set king over thee. Thou mayest not set a stranger over thee, which is not thy brother. But he shall not multiply horses to himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt, to the end that he should multiply horses, forasmuch as the Lord hath said unto you, ye shall henceforth return no more that way. Neither shall he multiply wives to himself, that his heart turn not away, neither shall he greatly multiply to himself silver and gold. And it shall be, when he setteth upon the throne of his kingdom, that he shall write him a copy of this law in a book out of that which is before the priests, the Levites. And it shall be with him, and he shall read therein all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God, to keep all the words of this law and these statutes, to do them, that his heart be not lifted up above his brethren, and that he turn not aside from the commandment to the right hand or to the left, to the end that he may prolong his days in his kingdom, he and his children in the midst of Israel." So we see in that passage in Deuteronomy 17 where God does make a provision for a king. Whether it was to be done at this time or not, it's hard to say. And he realizes that a king is going to eventually be ruling over the land. And we might also take note at this time that many of the times when Israel got into trouble because of the king, it may very well have been because the king violated some of the principles laid down back there in Deuteronomy 17 regarding the governing of the position of king. He talks about the gathering of the horses, the desire to go back to Egypt, the having of silver and gold, the multiplying of wives, the turning to other gods, and then the fact that they should have a copy of the law and follow it. So anytime a king violated one of those principles that God has already laid down hundreds of years ago for the kings of Israel, then they are going against the will of God, and the nation will necessarily have to suffer the consequences of that. Well, we see here that Samuel has faithfully told the people all the things that God has informed him of. He told them that God didn't want them to have this king, that this wasn't God's will. He told them that it was the same as revolting against God, the same as wanting to have the idolatrous gods before him. And then he told them the consequences of having the king. But the people, we find, didn't heed to this. In verse 19, "Nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel, and they said, Nay, but we will have a king over us." They wanted to have the king, and they said, "No, we will have the king. That we also may be like all the nations, that our king may judge us, and go out before us, and fight our battles." So they could just see the glorious things about having a king, all the pomp and the ceremony, the fighting the battles, the judging them, and so that they could just sit back and relax and be led by this great leader known as the king. And it's ironic for us to note that the first king they had, Saul, died in battle. Their last kings, the kings of Judah, also died and were captured as a result of battle with their enemies, in that particular case, the Babylonians. So it's not going to work out the way that they have it all planned here. They're going to have some very serious problems and regrets, and even eventually lose their nation while having a king. Verse 21, and Samuel heard all the words of the people, and he rehearsed them in the ears of the Lord. That is, Samuel took back to the Lord now the things that the people had said to them. He was keeping a communication both ways with God, from God to the people and from the people to God. He was truly a mediator in that respect here. And the Lord said to Samuel, hearken unto their voice and make them a king. So now Samuel is told by the Lord, he's given a divine and positive command by the Lord, listen to the people, listen to their desire, make them a king. And Samuel said unto the men of Israel, go ye every man unto his city. So now the thing is set. Samuel dismisses the assembly. He tells them to go back every man to his city. This king is not going to be elected or decided by you. God's going to be the one that puts the king in. This is the prerogative of God. The king will then be set in without your having any say as to who it's going to be. You go back to your cities and you wait. He's let the people know that they will have a king. He will, through the advice of God, yield to their command, their demand. A king will be selected, and all they have to do now is wait for this to happen. You go back, every man, unto his city. The people had made their demands upon God. They were going to have these demands fulfilled with all of the dire consequences thereof. And so now the thing for them to do is to go back, every man, to his city, and keep the peace, wait for God in his own due time to carry this matter out of selecting the king. Well, that closes the 8th chapter of 1 Samuel. We're going to conclude our lesson at that point. Till next time, this is NC Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.